So today we're going to talk about the art of the follow-up, and I've called it an art rather than a process or a science because there are a lot of things that I can tell you, like just do A, B, C, and D, and literally in most cases it is that easy, but there's some nuance involved, and we're going to talk about specifically how and why. And some of you have been kind enough to send me some actual interactions that you've been having with editors, and so I have some interesting sort of perhaps obscure, perhaps not so much cases to share with you guys today. The things that I want to cover are, I want to first of all talk about why following up is so absolutely important, because it's not just what you think. It's not just that if you follow up, you might get more responses. It's about your whole attitude as a freelancer, really, and about the way that you interact with editors. And as you start to change that method of interacting with editors through these types of email interactions, a lot of other things, the frequency and the ease with which you send pitches, issues that can come up when you're working on assignments that you might be scared to take to editors, all of these things will also get easier. And then we're going to look at the main reasons, and there might be some other ones, but I think I've corralled pretty much everything, at least the buckets into which every reason an editor might not respond falls into. And we're going to talk about why those are and what you can do about it. And I have it essentially organized into a them versus us. So what things are sort of the caused by, not necessarily the fault, but caused by the freelancer, which means that you can do it differently in the future, versus things that are caused by something to do with the editor. And what you can do in the future is write that editor off as not being somebody that you want to work with. And then we're going to talk about how to respond to every type of response you're going to come across. And I've included quite a few, and I'm going to talk about various shades of these different situations. So in terms of my own experience with following up, I have to say that this really changed just the whole course of my freelance writing in terms of working with magazines. And I really want this to do the same for you. And I remember there was a period where I just started pitching big magazines, not necessarily indiscriminately, but I think I just went through Media Bistro's How to Pitch because it was really the only thing at the time that had contact information for editors, because obviously our database wasn't around then. And I just went through and I was just pitching things. And I could not believe how many editors of very major national magazines that you're going to see on every newsstand anywhere in America got back to me, and got back to me pleasantly. And whilst many of them were no's, and some of them were no's for perfectly understandable reasons, like they've covered that too frequently, or we'll get into different types of no's later, I also got a fair number of yeses just right off the bat from the first pitch that I sent and following up on that first pitch. So no back and forth, no more pitches, no, oh, this isn't quite a fit for us, but just from that very first cold pitch, and more often than not, it was on the follow-up. And that has a lot to do with the busy, busy lives of editors. And I have up on the blog actually a post about what a day in the life of an editor is like. So I recommend checking that out if you're curious when I say that editors are busy, what all they really are doing. So before we get started in terms of talking about techniques for following up or why editors aren't responding to you, I want to zero in on this. Why is following up really going to change your career in so many different ways, not just, you know, just getting assignments from those particular pitches that you're following up on? So first and foremost, like I said, it helps you see that editors aren't that scary. And this is really important. Like I can say, oh, editors aren't that scary. And you can say, yeah, I know, they're people too. You know, they go home and they watch TV and they sit on their iPhones when they're having dinner with their spouses for their anniversary, just like everybody else. But the thing is that we don't really think that. I see so many questions that I get, or that are in, you know, various Facebook groups for writers, or that I hear at conferences, that act like, not, you know, that editors are some alien species, but that they're untouchable, they're uncommunicate with a bull, that they are on some sort of pedestal and we can't have normal human email interactions with them. And some of this certainly comes from the types of emails that you may have gotten from editors. And what I'm going to talk about later is that the editors that you get crummy emails from are often not editors that you want to work with. But in the meantime, over the proportion of time, so in terms of like the majority of pitch responses that you're going to get are going to show you that editors, by and large, especially the ones that you want to be working with, don't suck. And they're going to help you see which editors you do want to be working with. But here's the interesting thing. It also goes both ways. So I've spoken in the past about the types of reasons that editors don't respond to you. And I want to talk a little bit more about that in a second, because the thing is that we often think, you know, oh, editors are being rude to us. I have actually an email from somebody who sent in a question that talks about this. I got a rude response from an editor. And here's the thing, like I said, editors have a lot of stuff going on. They might have just gotten burned by a freelancer. And this is one of the things, is that editors get burned by writers all the time in all sorts of ways that you might not even think of. And they are very skittish about working with new writers for this reason. And I think editors, and even, you know, people who accept guest posts on their blog, but mostly from people they know, or who put together events and only have speakers they know, get a lot of flack for this concept of working with people that you know, or, you know, only supporting your friends and things like this. But here's the thing. A magazine has to come out every month or every quarter or whenever it comes out on its schedule with a certain number of pages filled with text that is edited to the level of professionality for that publication. And if an editor doesn't have a piece, they have to sit down on their weekend and not hang out with their kids and write that piece or something like that. So editors are, for very good reason, skittish about people that they don't know will allow them to complete their mission, which is filling the pages of their magazine. But that doesn't mean that they don't work with freelancers or that they don't want to work with you. It means that they need to be like alley cats and wary of anyone new until proven to not be frightening. So I don't usually say them in webinars, but I shared in the past, especially in our live events, a lot of situations of really ridiculous emails that I've gotten. And I have to say there's various categories that the kind of emails that make editors be like, oh my God, freelancers are crazy, I don't want to work with them ever again, fall into. And we're going to look at those in a little bit. But this whole concept of following up, of being in more regular communication with editors, of literally having a process like all businesses do that you follow as part of your following up procedures for your freelance business will help you to, in every single word that comes out of your keyboard, look like not a crazy freelancer. And we're gonna, like I said, we're gonna look more at this in a bit, but it's really, really key in terms of your confidence, which spills into, like I said, all of your words, all of your emails, because there's always gonna be a moment where you are working perhaps with a crazy editor or with an editor who's in a crazy situation, or who's just sent you an offhanded email, where you really feel like you're being attacked by an editor. And in those situations, you need your professional reserves of confidence that editors don't suck, that you are a worthwhile freelancer, and that you can handle this just like you would if you were working in an office and not in a way like you have been insulted personally. You need to have those reserves to draw upon in order to send editors back the right email. And so that's why the art of the follow-up extends way past just following up on your pitches and also into all of the email conversations that you're going to have with editors. And we're going to talk more about that after we talk about pitch responses. But here's when you send a pitch, what's happening. I think when you send a pitch, a lot of writers think that the point of that pitch is to get an assignment for the story that they're pitching. You can tell me if that's kind of in line with your experience or not. But I think that's generally the sort of accepted idea. You send this pitch and the purpose is to get an assignment for that particular story. Now, we've looked before at how you should be aiming to build a relationship with that editor and how you should be aiming just to get a response from that editor. But on the side of the editor, here are the things that your pitch actually needs to be accomplishing. Your very first communication with the editor. This is actually the steps that you need to follow in terms of breaking down the walls that the editors have. The first one is to show that you're sane, and that sounds kind of laughable, really. But I can't tell you how many pitches I get from people to review, even if it's just, you know, like for an event. And I say, hey, like, just give me a sample of a pitch that you've sent in the past so I can see where we all are with pitches. And I get pitches that I'm just like, oh my God, if I was an editor and I saw this, I would put them in like the block, this email address list. And I know that these people are totally normal, functioning people who write for markets and, you know, are not at all crazy, but their emails have started to sound like that with corresponding with editors. Either there's a hint of desperation, or there's just so much information that it looks like you don't know what you're talking about, or you don't know what your story is about, or you're offering them 25 different story ideas and you look schizophrenic. There's so many different kind of semi-writer psychotic things that can creep into your pitches if you're not careful. So the very first step, like I said, is to show them that you are sane. It sounds scary, crazy, weird, but it's true. That's the very first step. And you should always give your pitches like a comb afterwards, like sift through them and make sure that there's nothing that sounds desperate, schizophrenic, all of these little writer psychoses that editors are on the lookout for the smallest whiff of. Now, the next step is to show that you understand the magazine. Now, I understand that, like I said, a lot of us think that we're pitching just to get that particular story placed. And so you can get really in love with the story that you're pitching, with the destination that you've been to, with the business that you want to profile, you know, with this person that you met on the trip that just has this amazing story. You can get really in love with that. But in your pitch, it's absolutely fundamental that none of that matters. That the very highest priority that you have is actually how all of that matters to the magazine, not the wonderfulness of the person that you met or the incredible backstory of this business, but why that matters to the magazine. So that's the second hurdle that you have to cross. And the third one, this is the last one, is to show that you're a professional writer. And by that, I mean the quality of your writing, not that you're a professional. That was actually number one, showing that you're sane. So the quality of your writing is actually much further down on this ladder. And the reason for that is that editors can fix your writing. That's their job. And I'm going to look more at this later, but in fact, many editors get into editing because they fervently want to be out there helping writers become better writers. And I know if you've had negative interactions with editors, that seems a bit dreamy, but it really is true. But this is the thing, is I have this quote in my book and I use it all the time. The editor of 5280 at the Denver City Magazine at a conference was saying, I can fix the writing, but not the idea. But if you have a good idea, I can bring it home. I can help us get there. So what he means by that is that you need some specific information, some specific background, some specific experience that is special enough to become an article idea that's of great interest to his audience. But like I said, he said, if you have that, blah, 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 we can bring it home. But if the editor thinks that you're crazy, and by crazy, again, I mean you sound too desperate, you don't know what your idea is, you have too many things going on, you're exhibiting a whiff of one of these writer psychoses, then they're not going to want to bring it home with you. So in so many ways, showing the quality of your writing is like the last thing that you need to be doing in the pitch. You need to be showing you're somebody that they want to work with, and part of that is showing that you understand the magazine, and a large part of that is just showing that you're a human being. So let's get into that. We've got a question over here. Summer asks, are you using a particular software or type of document to manage your submissions and follow-ups that aren't included in your book? So this is, we're going to get into my follow-up procedure in a little bit. And I get this question a lot about using a software or a document to manage your submissions. And here's the thing. If you, and I'm not saying this to you particularly, Summer, but if any of you are sending 25 pitches a week, so every month you're sending 100 pitches, then by all means, set up a spreadsheet for yourself. If you are sending 25 pitches even in a whole month, or you're sending 5 pitches a month, or you're sending 10 pitches a month, you really don't need a software. You just need your calendar, and we're going to talk about how to do that in a minute, but what I see by and large, in fact, I just saw somebody recently show me their incredibly detailed apparatus for tracking their fitches. What I see by and large is that having that tracking system, it's like a kind of like technology fetish in a way, right? It's like checking your email all the time or like going on Twitter for new updates. It's this thing that you kind of look at and like hope that it will change and gives you something, or working on that makes you feel like you've moved forward somehow. But the fact of the matter is you're pitching time unless you are just so high level with your pitches that you're making tiny, tiny tweaks to the process to make it better. Your pitching time should be spent writing pitches, not on tracking or organizing or, you know, like making logs of how many times you've interacted with this particular editor, because you're probably not writing so many people that you can't remember off the top of your head when this editor emails you what's happened. If you want to be really quick and easy about it, past just using search in your email folder or your email provider, whatever that is, to find every other email that you have had that interacts with this person, there's contact management systems that you can use. So like one that I have that I totally don't use to full advantage is called Contactually. And I'll write that here because it's spelled really weirdly. Contactually is a contact management system. And what that actually does is it hooks in to your email itself. So it hooks in with your email provider and it logs all of your emails. And so it can do in the background these things of making sure that you've followed up with a certain editor within a certain amount of time, or that you've sent them a new pitch if you haven't pitched them in a while. But like I said, most of you probably don't need that. So we're going to get in a bit to the actual process that I recommend for following up. But first, let's talk about why editors don't get back to you in the first place. So this is what I was talking about this you versus them idea. So some of the things on this list, and you've probably taken a chance to skim over it while I was answering Summer's question. Some of the things on this list are about you, and some of the things on this list are about them. And I've said some of them are positive, some of them are negative, and I'm going to talk about why. One other question. Somebody says, should we send a thank you note once the story is published? This is an interesting question that goes back a little bit to what I was saying about Summer's question, which is that you want to be in regular communication with these editors. And so if you have pitched them a story and they've accepted it, you should pitch them another story. So by the time that the story that you originally pitched them that was commissioned has come out, you should already be on your third story with them. And I say this because I just had a coaching call the other day with somebody that's in our full coaching program. So I talk to her really often. And she had a piece that I know she was working on for this outlet that we were really excited she was working with. It was an online outlet that has her do feature style stories that she can report that are really interesting. And they pay quite decently for an online feature outlet, especially for the length and for the amount of work involved. And she had done this piece for them, or I knew that she got the piece assigned. I knew when she was working on it, but then I didn't hear anything else about it. So I asked her and I said, so what else are you doing for this outlet right now? And she said, oh, yeah, I should have talked to you about that. And what she went on to say was that she sent them another pitch. And this is a great follow-up story here, okay? She sent them another pitch and the editor said, well, that doesn't quite work for me. Let me send it to this other editor. And I have somebody else has sent us a question about this, and I'm going to get to that when we get to the reader questions in a bit. But she said that this pitch went to another editor. That editor said it didn't work for them. So then she sent another pitch, right? She's following up. It's great. She sent another pitch back to her first editor, and the editor said it didn't work for her. So now she's in the two strikes. But she already did a piece with them, right? So it's not like she's in two strikes, you're out zone, if you really want to call it that way. But she's done a piece with them and the editors are still responding to her. So the thing though is that she did stop pitching. After the second rejection, she stopped pitching them. And so we sat down and we generated like 5 or 6 super applicable ideas for them. And now she can run through those. And what we did was that we took the feedback from those two pitches that they didn't accept and we completely changed what she was pitching them. Because what had happened was that she sent them one story and they bought the story. And then she started pitching them similar stories. And this is a really important anecdote to use because I see this happen a lot. And in fact, this is one of the reasons that I say to be very careful if you get an acceptance on your first pitch out of the blue without any other interactions with the editor, because it can validate for you the idea that the ideas you have for that market are great in and of themselves, and you don't need to be checking in very closely all the time with what they're publishing. So she pitched them a new idea that was similar to what she had done before, and they said it didn't work for them because they don't really cover blah, blah, blah. And in her head, she thought, well, the story that I did for you was kind of peripheral, so I know you do stories that are kind of peripheral to those topics. So let me send you one more idea that's peripheral to those topics, even though you just told me you only cover blah, blah, and blah. And so what happened was that she sent a second pitch that was too much like the first pitch they had rejected. And that's something you never want to do. If an editor rejects you, and we're going to get back into how to do all these responses in a minute, if an editor rejects you, you always want to make sure that your new pitch is offering them something new and not a new idea, but it's showing an improvement based on whatever feedback they gave you of what didn't work about the previous pitch. Okay, so let's talk, like I said, about some reasons. Actually, I think this should be all the reasons that editors aren't getting back to you. So, first reason, I'm alternating here between them and you. Okay, so very, very first, most important reason is that they're too busy. Okay, and like I said, this is the very first and most important reason, because this is almost always, more often than not, the reason that they are not getting back to you. This is like the hugest bucket of non-responses in the world, okay? This is very easy to fix. So here I say it's them, as in they are the cause of this, but it's a positive non-response for you because it's easy to fix. All you have to do is follow up until they pay attention. It's really easy. So this isn't the type of editors not getting back to you that has some sort of negative connotation. And most editors aren't getting back to you because of this reason. So what that means is that most of the time that editors haven't responded to you, it's not because of anything bad. Now, I'm getting the worst reason that could be your fault or that involves your impetus out of the way here. The second reason they might not be getting back to you is because your pitch is just that bad. And isn't that what we're all afraid of? That our pitch is so bad that the editors just don't even want to respond. They don't want to engage with you because it seems like you're putting off whiffs of crazy, right? Of desperation, of pitch idea, schizophrenia, etc. So here's the thing. This is very easy to figure out. If you are pitching multiple editors and you are following up on the schedule that I'm going to talk about and no one gets back to you at all, it's absolutely this. So this is actually like, it's a bad thing, as in it's like negative, but if this is the reason that you aren't getting responses, it's also incredibly fixable. And it's also very clear very quickly if this is the reason that you aren't getting responses. So if this is happening to you, if you are pitching many different editors and you are following up and you are not ever getting responses, or you're always getting very bland no's, we'll talk about different types of no's in a minute, then it means that your pitches are bad. And that's great. Right? That's so weird for me to say that. But it's great to find that out, because now you know what you need to do. You need to improve your pitches, and it's probably not just your pitch, it's probably your idea. So if you are getting across the board with different editors after following up all non-responses or no's, it is a 100% indication that all you need to do next is improve your article ideas and your pitches. And we've got a lot of resources on that. So I know many of you fall into this bucket. I have people come to Pitchapalooza and things like this that are like this. And like I just said, it's not only not the end of the world, but it's a very easily diagnosable fix. And so if this is something that you're suffering from, don't feel sad. It's not the end of the world. It's just a very clear sign for what your next step in your travel writing career needs to be. You need to work on your article ideas. They need better. You need to be paying more attention to what magazines are looking for. And we've got all sorts of resources, from the webinars I mentioned earlier to the travel magazine database, to help you with that. And if you feel like you're sending editors exactly what they are asking for and you're getting these responses, then the issue is that you are not being aware of the differences between what they want and what you're sending. And so that means you need to work on your market awareness. And the prescription for that I always give is to just spend time sitting in the travel magazine database reading it, just reading exactly the type of articles that magazines are publishing exactly the types of sections that they have. My prescription for this is usually like 15 minutes a day in the morning or in the evening when you're watching television. Just skim over different articles. So that is your first prescription. If you're just not getting responses, you need to figure out what editors are looking for that you're not providing, and that's where to start. Now, next one, and we have a very interesting case about this that somebody emailed me about that we'll talk about later, is an editor might not get back to you, and because of themselves, if they or their magazine, it can vary, have a policy of not responding to no's. And I'm going to put off talking about kind of what's going on here until later because I've got a really good example of this coming up. But if they say that, or if you see it on the magazine's website, that there's a policy of not responding to no's, I just want to say it's probably a sign that you don't want to work with that editor. Because like even I, for instance, I can't help it. Like I have had crazy interactions with people who pitch me things, but I still can't help but respond to the no's of the people who look somewhat sane because I just want them to have closure. So most editors, and we'll talk more about this, but most editors that you want to work with can't help but respond even if the answer is no. Now, the next one is a bit different. So this is something where you are the cause of this non-response, but it can look like it's the editor's fault. And this is the kind of thing where I see slash hear a lot of people acting like the editor is somehow wronging them in these situations. So what's happening here is that you've sent a pitch and then the editor sits on it. And what that means is they refuse to respond to your emails following up on the pitch because they might want to use it, but they don't want to get your hopes up because they aren't sure. And this seems like the editor's being a douche, right? However, you have created the situation most of the time. And what I mean by that is you haven't given the editor an incredibly clear reason why the article needs to come out now. You haven't very clearly shown them what section it needs to be in or how it needs to look like. The reporting isn't there. They aren't sure if you're the person for the piece. But if you are in maybe Landia, as I call it, that's pretty much always on you. And we're going to talk about pitching to no in a minute and how you can avoid getting stuck in maybe Landia. But this is really something that you don't want to be in. It sucks, and it sucks for the editor too, because they want to get back to you, but they don't want to get your hopes up or tell you an article is going to happen when they're not sure. But you can avoid it. Now, the next one, and this is something that a lot of people are afraid of, and I always tell people it doesn't happen. So I'm going to tell you exactly the instances in which this happens. So this is something where it's the editor's fault, and it's horrific, and people in the industry, as in other editors, not only don't condone this, but I literally heard an editor at a conference recently say, well, that's karma, and that's going to come back to bite them. So if you don't hear back from an editor, and not in 1 month, not in 2 months, maybe not even in 3 months, but like in a year or something, you see a story with your exact source, your exact words, it might have been stolen. And when I say it might have been, I say, like I said, because this practice is very, very rare. So I'm going to tell you about two examples where I've seen this. One is, I'm going to try to make this as vague as possible to not out the people involved, but I recently heard of a magazine where someone was, I believe, interning or she was working, and she caught wind that there was an internal spreadsheet where they would log every single pitch that came in and the sources and essentially the content of that pitch in case they wanted to write that story in-house in the future. Now, I know which publication this is. I think it only affects perhaps some of you. It's a regional publication, and it's a really, really horrible practice. But like I said, this is the only time I have ever heard of something this heinous in a systematic fashion. The other time I have heard of this actually seriously happening was from a writer who had seen an article with the exact words of her pitch. So that's pretty unmissable. But what happened was it was in a different magazine than the one that she pitched. And I'm not sure if it was even the same magazine company, as in like legally that it could kind of be an issue. What seems to have transpired was that one editor forwarded this individual's pitch to a different editor that was a friend of theirs, saying, hey, you should run this in your publication. And somewhere in those lines of communication, they wrote the piece themselves instead of getting in touch with the editor, which, whether it was the receiving editor or the publishing editor that was really at fault there, isn't clear. But these are literally like the only two actual verifiable idea stealing schemes that I've ever heard. So one of them is clearly an evil publication that none of us wants to work with. And the other one is like an evil person or set of people that none of us ever want to work with. So these things aren't systematic. And like the very lovely editor at a conference that I just mentioned said, that's horrible and karma is going to get them. So this is like the smallest, tiniest piece of the pie in terms of reasons why editors aren't responding to your pitch. Now, also a small piece of the pie, and this is a small piece of the pie, not because it doesn't happen, but because the time window on it is short, is that this is a version of Maybelandia, but it's smaller. So this is the case where they're going to say yes, but they have to hammer out some details that just take time. And that usually means that they have an editorial meeting that they need to present their idea at, and that the ideas for various issues are decided collaboratively by a team. So this is, I don't know if I want to say it's becoming increasingly common, but I definitely know many outlets that work like this. I wouldn't say it's all of them. And if you're pitching outlets that are of the size where there's essentially one editor in chief that's doing the assigning, it probably isn't the case, but it still can be. For instance, I know if FAR decides their article ideas like this, and maybe that's why it takes them so long to respond to us. But some editors are just handicapped by the fact that they have to take all ideas that they're interested in to their editorial meeting and discuss them with their peers and get a group yes there. Now, some editors will write back to you and say this. However, like being in Maybelandia, they often don't want to get your hopes up. But this is something that has a statute of limitations. It's not ever going to take more than a month, just in terms of how frequently editorial meetings happen. If they only have them once a month and you sent your pitch the day after, within the next month, they're going to have another one. Typically, they happen more often than that. So this is kind of a version of Maybelandia, but it's not really avoidable unless you just pitch different publications. So if this is something that's going to bother you, like I said, you can exclusively pitch publications or the editor-in-chief has all the say, and that's that. So that's the way to avoid this. But it's not the end of the world, and if you want to work with big, big national magazines, this is often going to be the case. So I mentioned this earlier, and I mentioned how I compulsively respond no to people even when I shouldn't, when I'm sure that they don't care, but just because I want to give people closure. But across the board, editors that I have met that have an actual very deep interest in working with writers to improve their writing and really make your writing shine, not just in this piece, but overall, and to create lasting relationships with the same writers to work with them again and again, will get back to you one way or another at some point. And I am talking about editors at the level of the New York Times, at the level of a FAR. I'm talking about serious, very major publications here. I hear this from editors again and again, that they feel bad that they have all these pitches that they haven't responded to, and they try to get through them. I heard an editor at a publication that I know all of you want to be pitching the other day tell me that she tries to get back to every single pitch within at least 3 weeks. That's amazing. That's ridiculous. I see editors of small publications who don't get back within like 6 months. So even the editors at the publications that you think like never get back to you, they really, really do try. And here's the thing. When an editor does get back to you and they make a point to do that, it's very important to honor that with a response. Because like I said, the editors that are doing this are the good people. They're the editors that you want to work with. But they are doing it because they feel an obligation to you. Like they feel guilty about not getting back to you. And it's so important to honor that they have done that. And we're going to talk about some ways to do that. So I mentioned this earlier. I've talked about it in the past, but I just want to reiterate what I mean by this. Always pitch to no. And what that means is that your pitch, like the text of your pitch, should be oriented that the editor has to give you some kind of a response. You have chosen a specific section. Your idea has a time peg that will expire. And so if the editor simply doesn't have space for your story in the allotted time, they'll have to tell you no. your idea is so specific that the editor should know immediately whether or not they should use it. And here's why. Because no gives us so much information. So let's talk about different types of no's. Actually, I'm going to go forward to one slide and then we're going to come back to the process. Or maybe it's more than one slide. New platform. Can't see my future slides. Let's see. All right. Okay. Different types of no's that you might get. I want to talk about this first. There's three different types of no's. And in book publishing, they call them A, B, and C no's because publishing houses essentially have these letters, like these form letters that they send out. And so they have names for them and they're A, B, and C. So I'm going to go actually up the ladder starting with C. So the C no is the form letter like one, which is just so bland and general that it gives you no information. So they might say it's not for us, it's not a fit. It's just not giving you much. It's pretty useless. So I like to treat form no's like the useless non-communication that they are and just send a brand new pitch. And we're going to talk about the process of that in a second. But a form no that gives you no information means just send a new pitch. Now, I mentioned earlier that if you're getting a lot of no's or non-responses, at some point it means you need to start looking at your pitches, okay? And you need to make sure that your pitches are good enough. So if everything that you're getting all the time, including on follow-ups, is a C no, that means you need to take a look at your pitches, but you don't have enough information from the editors to do that. So it's a tricky situation and you need to self-diagnose or you can have me do a query critique. But a B no gives you information you can work with. So this is when I was talking about the anecdote before of the coaching student who had sent two pitches that didn't get responses and then she stopped pitching because she didn't want to ruin the relationship since she's already done an article with them. And we figured out what was the feedback they were giving her that she hadn't been responding to, and then she was able to move forward. Okay, so the B no is a type of no that's pretty brief. It's not like a one-word email that just says no, or that just says no thanks, you know, no capitalization, no period. These things happen from editors. This is the type of email where they say, this sounds like a great story, like I'd love to see it when it comes out, but we just can't use it. Or, you know, I'm just done with truffles right now. It doesn't really matter where they are, but we just can't do any more truffle stories. Or, wow, that sounds amazing, but I just don't think we can do Abu Dhabi more than once a year, and we just did it in January. Some type of reason like this, where the editor actually, like a normal human being, just tells you why they are saying no to you. This is something that you can absolutely use. But the best type of no, of course, is the one where they say, please pitch us again. And here's the thing. They all mean that. I have to say this because so many people think that they don't. So many people think that editors are just saying that to be nice, but they really don't. See, they have all of these other different types of no's that they could have given you, and they didn't. They chose to give you the golden no. They chose to give you the please pitch us again no. They really, really do mean it. And please, 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 please pitch them again. And soon will they still remember you. Now, let's back up and talk about the process here. So I talked about A, B, and C no's. So here's how A, B, and C no's fit into this process. So this is the process that I teach. And I basically guarantee you that if you do this process, you can break into absolutely any publication that you are possibly interested in. That sounds crazy, but here's the thing. It's a rinse and repeat process, and you should be improving on every single repitch because, I'm going to keep going back and forth between the slides here, because every time you get one type of no or another, it's giving you some information that's helping you move forward. Either you get the A pitch that tells you the editor really likes what you're doing and you just need to send them more pitches. You get the B pitch, which means they've given you something specific to change, now just go change that. Or you've gotten the C pitch, which means your pitches period need to change/improve and that you need to go work on that before you pitch again. So I've got a couple questions building up, but let me quickly go through this process. So here's how I teach it. And this is also the answer to Summer's question earlier that I said I was going to follow up on if you just follow this process, you really don't need anything besides just your normal calendar on your phone or your computer in terms of tracking your pitches. So here's how it works. Day one, it's not necessarily the first of the month, it's just day one in our current timeline. You send a pitch. We'll call it pitch A. It's like the first pitch for the publication. I was going to say pitch one, but then there were too many numbers on this slide. So you send pitch A. 2 weeks later, you follow up on pitch A. If it's an online outlet, you can do all these follow-ups in 1 week rather than 2 weeks. And actually, you should. You shouldn't let it go so long if it's an online outlet. So we're talking about print for now. So day one, you send pitch A. Day 15, you say, hi, I just wanted to check in with you about pitch A. Do you have any questions? Thanks. Seriously, like that's it. It should be short and you should respond with the pitch that you already sent. And pro tip, don't forward your pitch, reply to your pitch. Because then when it shows up in the editor's inbox, it says RE and then the subject line, okay? Now, here is the trick. Here is the difference that most people aren't doing. In another 2 weeks, you follow up again, but with a new pitch. So what do I mean by that? You say, hi, brilliant editor. It seems like pitch A didn't do it for you, wasn't what you needed, doesn't work for you, whatever language fits with your personality. So I wanted to send you pitch B. And then you just have a brand new, completely fleshed out, not, oh, would you like another pitch on this, this, or that? You send them a completely fleshed out pitch. Now, here's the thing. This process that I've outlined here, this whole thing is what you do when you are getting no responses at all. So we're going to go and talk about what happens when you're getting responses and how to respond to each different type of one. So this is what you do when you're operating in a complete vacuum. You send a pitch. You say, hi, editor. I wanted to follow up with you about pitch A. Do you have any questions? Here it is again. Next time, hi, editor. It seemed like you weren't interested in pitch A, so I wanted to see what if this would work for you. Include text of pitch B. Next email. Hi, editor. I wanted to follow up with you on pitch B. Do you have any questions? Just like that. You just keep going. It's so easy. Like, you just use exactly what I just said. Nothing fancy. No more words. Keep it short. And you just keep doing that. And I promise you, they will eventually respond to you one way or another. So now let's incorporate all these things. So part of this whole rinse and repeat thing and incorporating what editors have told you in their responses into your next pitch or your follow-ups is trusting that no matter how much you have read the publication, you really don't know what they need. And what I mean by that is I had a really interesting conversation with some editors at a conference recently, which was basically like, kind of along the veins of like, how can we know what to pitch you? Or is there something that you need right now? And they were basically like, well, right now, you know, this interesting thing happened and I need pitches on that. Next month, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what pitches that I need. And so this is one of the reasons you can fall into maybe Landia, because editors don't know what Trump is going to do next. I mean, they don't know what the next newsy thing that they're going to have to peg to travel is going to be. So they don't know what pitches that they need. But at the time that they need them, they will know. And so you have to just kind of trust that editors have whims for very real reasons that we can't do anything about, that we should just understand, and that it's our job as the freelancers to help them with whatever it is that they need. So I'm just going to take a quick question. And I said, we'll get into more questions in a bit. But somebody said, can we ask for an editorial calendar? You can totally ask. It's absolutely useless. Editorial calendars, in terms of what is happening in terms of print words, if it's from a freelancer and it's on the editorial calendar, it's been assigned. If it's on the editorial calendar and it's not from a freelancer, it very well might not happen. Things get, like I just said, things get assigned when they get assigned, when editors have the time to assign them, when they have the deadline going, when they know what needs to be in that issue. The editorial calendar is for advertisers. Editors have nothing really to do with the editorial calendar in terms of checking in with it regularly about what story ideas they're looking for. It's absolutely for advertisers. So for us, it's pretty much next to useless. So you can ask for it if you want. You also can find it on their website. Editors of big magazines hate when you ask them for their editorial calendar. Editors of small magazines don't mind. So by and large, I think you don't really need to. But what you do need to do is be prepared that the editor might need something completely different than what you think they need because something behind the scenes has changed that hasn't yet come to fruition in the magazine. That might be that they're revamping their magazine. That might be that somebody has suddenly left. There's all sorts of things that they might need. And you need to find a way to ferret that out without sounding crazy, right? So I mentioned this before. I'm going to mention it again. I'm giving you some particular things to look out for here. So as we are following up, part of the reason that I said implement this regimented every 2 week or 1 week if you're pitching online market schedule and stick to it. Here's why. Because if you don't have a schedule and you just think, oh God, I sent this pitch, I need to follow up on it. When am I going to follow up on it? Then you can start to get into this mode where the text that comes out of your fingers as you type starts to veer into having a whiff of crazy. So we can make like a little meme of this, but keep calm and reply on. Just follow your schedule. Just use your text. Don't deviate. Just operate like a standard operating procedures business. This is what you do. This is the schedule that you do it on. There's no other text that needs to go in those emails. Now, you'll notice in my process, I said pitch A, follow up on pitch A, pitch B, follow up on pitch B. There is a statute of limitations for following up on the same pitch. Some editors are okay with you doing it twice. Some editors, like I said, think you shouldn't even do it once. And those aren't necessarily editors that we want to work with, but we're going to look at that in a minute. So two is kind of the golden number here because you've sent the pitch, you're following up on it, okay? Now, when you send the next pitch, if the editor was really interested in the idea and they were just sitting on it, it's in maybe Landia, they're waiting for their editorial meeting, something, they will often get back to you when you send pitch B and say, wait, actually, I want to assign you pitch A. Let's talk about pitch A. Totally weird secret thing, but it happens a lot because then they get FOMO. This is like the only popular term that I use. They get FOMO that they're going to lose that story. Now, we should all be simultaneously pitching all the time, and I'm going to talk about that as well. Another thing, never, pretty much. There might be some exceptions to this, but it's like you accept an article and then your mother died and you have to back out. There's very few exceptions here. Never write an editor a brand new email right after you have written them, especially more than one. I cannot tell you how often people apply to write for me or work for me or something, and they send me 3-5 emails in a row, like they've forgotten something. And then they write me to say they've forgotten it. And then they write me to say, oh yeah, and here's the attachment. And then they write me to say, oh no, I misspelled attachment in that last email. Like that is more than a whiff of crazy. That is like, I'm absolutely not responding to you, although I actually usually do. But that's like, I'm absolutely not working with you. And that's how every single editor feels. Now, there's a Monday mailbag post where somebody had an email about this that I recommend you read in a little bit more detail, but don't pull a pitch switch. And what I mean by that is it's sort of similar to writing the editor right after you've written them. But what I mean is don't pitch an editor a story and then on the follow-up, send them an improved pitch for the same story. Your pitch is your pitch. You can't change it now, not with that editor at least, especially not in the short-term future. So once you've sent a pitch, that's it. That's the text. Like I said, your follow-up should just be, hey, following up on this, do you have any questions? Okay. So I talked about the different types of no's. We're going to skip over these slides because I already did them. And how when they say, please pitch me again, they really, really, really mean it. Now, what do you say, however, if you get a good no or even like a B no, if you get an A no or a B no, and you don't have another pitch ready for that publication? Two things. First of all, keep jumping around on the slides. Okay, so first of all, on the process, I highly recommend when you're working on pitch A, because you know you'll be sending pitch B and perhaps eventually pitch C, but hopefully you'll keep working with them and you're going to go all the way up to pitch C. As you're working on pitch A, jot down ideas for pitches B, C, D, E, F, etc. Jot down more ideas for this publication. It helps you both. You can even just write the whole pitch. It helps you so that you have something ready if you get to day 30 and you haven't heard from them, but it also helps you when you get a B and an A no, especially an A no, because that means you can just send them like any old pitch that you think might fit for them because you're on the right track. But it also helps when you send a B no. But what happens if you should be responding right away and you don't have time to send a proper pitch? Pro tip, okay? Write the editor back and say, thank you so much for getting back to me, right? Honor the fact that they responded to you. I'm about to board an airplane for Zambia right now, but I'd love to send you some more pitches later. Is there a certain section that you need pitches for? Another way to say that is there a destination that you've been looking pitches on? Or is there a topic that you've been looking for pitches on? So if you don't have time to write them a pitch right away, or you don't have one ready, don't do this more than once with the same editor though, okay? Ask them what they need. Ask them how you can help them. And then here is the real icing on the cake of this pro trip, okay? Is after you say, is there a destination you need pitches on? Or is there a topic you need pitches on? Is there a section you need pitches for? Say, even if I don't have something for you, I'd love to connect you with another writer who does, okay? You are showing the editor that you want to help them, that you understand it's your job to help them, that you are in their court, okay? Now, I promised you I would get to a couple different things that I mentioned in passing earlier, so I'm gonna get into the questions that came over email from readers before, but I've got a bunch of questions that have come in from chat, so let me pop over and take a look through those. Okay, I'm just gonna read these verbatim. I haven't gotten a chance to read them yet. So what do you do when a pitch is accepted? You write the story, do two edits, and then you don't hear anything further from the editor. No, this is great, we need one more edit. No, reply to as when the article is gonna come out or when it's gonna be published. So I actually have a whole slide on this. So we're gonna get to this question in a little bit. Now somebody asked, is the reply versus forward instruction so they can see the entire thread of what was pitched and rejected? No, you should keep your thread pretty clean. So the only time, so basically if you're sending the follow-up on pitch A should be in the thread so that they can see pitch A. You always want the editor on the follow-up to be able to see the pitch that you wrote earlier. Don't make them go searching for it. They won't, and they really won't like it. So when you send pitch B and you said, hey, it seems like you weren't interested in pitch A, here's another pitch for you, you can keep pitch A in there. But then when you're following up on pitch B and you say, hey, I wanted to follow up on pitch B, do you have any questions? Get rid of the earlier part of the thread with pitch A. So the only time there should be that overlap is when you say, hey, it looks like you weren't interested in that, I'm sending in a new pitch. Because that's their kind of last chance to look and be like, was I actually interested in that? No, okay, it's fine. All right, next question. So when I worked in PR, I had a good relationship with an assistant editor. When I moved to freelance, the assistant told me to add her along with senior editor to pitches. I did and pitched, heard back immediately from assistant editor and not the other. Followed up and still nothing. Is it time to pitch something? It's time to pitch something new, but should I still ping the assistant editor with the main editor or just the assistant editor separately? I think in this case, and this is an interesting one because I have another question or I have another reader submitted thing in here about sending pitches to a different editor, but I haven't heard somebody say about CCing editors. So if somebody's told you that you need to CC another editor on the pitches, it means probably that they need to discuss the pitch with that editor or that they need to get some interest from that editor or go ahead or something. Now, this is really something they should do internally. And what I mean by that is that you should pitch your editor, your editor should interact with the higher up editor, and then they should come back to you. This situation sounds a bit wonky, and what I mean by that is that like you are super exposed. Basically, like in this case, the assistant editor has responded to the pitch and then nothing, which probably means that the senior editor wasn't interested in the assistant editor kind of jumped the gun. So in this case, especially since you had a relationship, I would maybe check back in with the assistant editor and say, hey, I heard from you about this pitch. It seemed like you weren't interested. I'd like to send some new pitches. Should I just send them to you directly? But what I feel is probably the case is that there's something weird going on with their internal system, and it gets into the category of see editors who aren't responding for reasons that are their fault and you don't really want to work with them. So it's a weird situation. And like I said, if you have a really close personal relationship, you can just ask them what's up. But it sounds like there's internal weirdness that you just don't want to get involved in. Summer has a question about if there's niche mags that you write for regularly, you recommend setting up your own editorial calendar in Google for future pitch ideas with reminders. Yeah, this is called a tickler file, and it's an old pre-internet concept where you set reminders for yourself of things that are coming up so that you do it at the time. And I think that's a great idea, kind of in theory, like to remind yourself, you know, that it's the 150th anniversary of Canada before everybody starts pitching it. But I also think that if you have a pitch idea, it's kind of never too early. So if you have a relationship with an editor, like I often send them, this is people I've written multiple stories for, you guys, don't do this to new editors, but I'll send them like all of my ideas for the year. So basically like in September or October or even earlier of the year before, I send them all the stories I want to do for them then for the next year. And then they assign from that. And that's very common for magazines that you work with regularly. And that's how those stories end up on the editorial calendar, is because other freelancers have pitched their whole year of stories in advance. Okay, I think I've gotten through most of these questions. Let's see. Oh, great. Okay, so Jade has a question. What do I do after pitching, getting an A response, pitching again, getting a let me take it to the editorial meeting response, and then hearing nothing? So my question about hearing nothing is, did you follow up after that? Like, how long did you wait to follow up? Because here's the thing about pitching to know, right? Is that we pitch and follow up and then send a new pitch when we're working in a vacuum. Once an editor shows an interest or is on the line for an idea, you should just keep following up with them, not more than once every 2 weeks for magazines or once every week for websites, until you get a response. And I've got a really interesting case about that coming up when we talk about how to deal with things that you've already been assigned. Okay, so let's talk about things that have come in from readers, because we're over time now, but I know it took us a while to get going. So on simultaneous pitching, you guys might have read this reader submitted text in the background while I was going through questions. So this is kind of the situation where all of you guys might be like, well, that person's horrible and I want to be in her shoes and don't talk to me about this situation. But I want to bring this up because we should all be pitching simultaneously. I say this all the time and people still don't believe me. And this whole, in Italian we call it ansia, but it's like this anxiety, but really it's like these closing kind of clenching feelings that we get about sending pitches that don't get responses are all alleviated by simultaneous pitching. You should never be sitting on ideas, okay? So she sent a very similar, nearly identical pitch to editors at 4 different magazines, and 3 of them replied to her with a yes. Now she's not sure what to do, as she's found herself in a situation she never thought she'd be in. This is great, we should all be in these situations, guys. Now she says, do I just go with the one offering the most money, or do I pit them against each other and bid up? Now, you can pit them against each other and bid up. What I told her when I got this email was absolutely go for the one with the most money. However, if it's possible to spin the ideas, and not necessarily the idea itself, but the way that you're physically writing it. So the text that goes on the page, the interviews that you do, the examples that you use, the lead that you begin with, if it's possible to make those different so that each of these can become 3 different articles, first, I would go to the highest bidder and I would say, great, thanks. I have a couple other people interested in this idea. Can you give me a contract so that we can move ahead with this? Once that's in place, I would go to the other ones and I would say, hey, so-and-so got to this idea before you. If it's okay with you, I can write this piece for you in a way that's different than theirs, 100% copyright different, by doing X, Y, and Z. If not okay, no hard feelings. Is there, let me send you a new pitch, or like, here's a new pitch for you below. Okay. So that's how I would handle the situation. And part of why I started with this first is to show you editors can get back to you. They can be awesome and you absolutely need to follow up. More common situations. This is sort of similar to the one that Emily mentioned. Thanks for your pitch. I've sent it on to so-and-so who deals with this section and she'll be in touch if it's of interest. Now, this is really like the don't call us, we'll call you response, right? So this is a little tough because she doesn't give you the email of so-and-so. You should be able to find out the email for so-and-so, and here's what I would do. So this happened, this went away. I would find the email for so-and-so. In about 2 weeks, I would say, hey, so-and-so, first so-and-so said that they were sending you this pitch,
make sure you include the pitch in the body of the email. And I just wanted to follow up and see if it was a fit for you. Okay. In the background, as soon as this first editor says, thanks for the pitch, I've sent it on to blah, 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 who deals with this section, say, great, thanks, here's a new pitch for you. So send, keep the relationship with this current editor going by sending her a new pitch while the other one is bubbling around with the other editor. Okay, now, this was the rude response one that I mentioned earlier. I recently followed up on a pitch and received a rude response about how they said that due to the volume of submissions, they wouldn't be able to answer every pitch. I was a little annoyed, but I responded very nicely, and she ended up writing back and telling me why the pitches it was wouldn't work and recommending ways I could refine the angle and try again. Now, two things here. This went on to turn into assignment, but you'll notice that this is the alley cat, okay? In the beginning, they're weeding out crazies. But then they could tell from this writer's response that she wasn't a crazy, and so then they started interacting with her. Now, this is very important because, and I've bolded here, it wasn't bold in her original email, but this rude response, I didn't see it, she didn't forward it to me, but I bet that that was like their very standard line. And here's the thing, standard lines, whether they come from you or the editor, can sometimes look rude if you are looking for that. But here's the thing, editors 100% don't have time to think about whether emails are rude. Like, this is why a lot of editors that you're getting from emails look rude, because they don't have time to think about that. And so all of the time that you're spending on your emails thinking about whether it looks curt or not to the editor is completely wasted. They're not thinking about those things. They are just conveying information in the fastest way possible, and you should do the same. And so the fact that she wrote back and said, thanks, I understand that. You know, I just wanted to see if this would work for you. If not, no problem. I just wanted to make sure that you had seen it. Is also just facts. So it's really important, the art of the follow-up is to keep calm and reply on. Forget feelings, forget being personally insulted, just take the facts as they are on the page. And like I said, if you're getting a lot of C responses, the facts are that you need to improve the quality of your ideas. If you're getting a lot of B responses, the facts are that you need to incorporate the feedback that the editor is giving you. And if you're getting A responses, the fact is that you absolutely need to follow up and send that editor more pitches. Okay, there was a couple questions on this, and I promised I would circle back to this. So other important areas to not drop the follow-up ball. One of them, and I put this in here because I swear to God, there's some writing groups on Facebook where most questions are about this. It boggles my mind how people just keep asking essentially the same question over and over again. Like, there's people who file a story and then go on Facebook and put a 1500 word, like minute by minute thing about how they filed the story. They realize something and then they realize something else. And oh my God, like, what is the editor thinking? And they sent the other editor an email, and then they realized, oh my God, I shouldn't have sent that editor an email. And then they sent another email saying, oh, it's okay, we can just talk about it. And all of this has happened in like a 10-hour window when the editor isn't even in the office. And in the morning they say, thanks, I don't have time to look at the piece until Friday. Like, just send me the new version of whatever you want to send me. Don't stress out about these things, okay? Reply like a normal human being. And I'm going to talk about some specific situations. So if you have gotten an assignment and you are waiting on information that you need from the editor in order to create the article itself, don't work on the article. Until the editor sends you the things that they have said that they will send you for you to commence working on the piece, don't do the piece. Just don't. Because otherwise what happens is you work on the piece, something has happened behind the scenes in some way, shape, or form, and that piece isn't going to fly anymore. But now you've sunk this time into it and you feel bad about it, and then you have to go shop it around somewhere else, and then it's just a whole rabbit hole. If an editor is not themselves crazy and has had something happen that involves them not being able to answer your question, they will understand that you then need to adjust the deadline, okay? I had I think I talked about this in my book, but I've definitely mentioned it before. I had an editor for a major newsstand publication literally call me during East Coast brunch time on a Saturday, and he was on the West Coast, so it was super early for him. Call me on the phone to accept a pitch and ask if I could do it on a rush and walk through the whole thing with me. So there were no emails going on, okay? And I said, okay, like send me the contract and the the style guide, whatever. I go out, do the research, like time goes by, I write up the piece. It's essentially the day that it's due because like I said, it was due in like 5 or 6 days and I haven't gotten anything. So then I followed back up with the original editor who I pitched that was like an assistant editor or something. She clearly nudged the main editor. I eventually got the style guide, which was crazy. They had all these words that you can't use because they consider them trite and all this stuff. And like I thankfully did the research and didn't start writing the piece. I just kind of started outlining it. But if I had written up the whole piece before I got that thing, I would literally need to rewrite the entire thing from scratch. And it would take me 3 or 4 times as long because I would feel really pissed off that I'd already written the thing and now I was having to write it again. But then the saga continues. So I didn't get ever that contract or the assignment from that editor in chief. And so then what happened was the next interaction I got from him was he needed my information for the masthead, for that little contributor's part where they ask you some questions and they have your picture. Still no contract, okay, but now I kind of have a publication date. Then finally, I see it on the newsstand and I write him and I say, I never got a contract for this. Like, can you please, whatever, you know, like deal with this? And he's like, okay, great. Like, we pay $50 for this section, but it was great working with you. Like, please pitch us features because those pay $1,000. I'm like, are you effing kidding me that you pay $50 for this, like, 2-page spread? And you pay $1,000 for features that are about the same. Like, if you had been not completely BSing by hiding this in order to get the piece from me and run it before you told me that, I never would have written the piece for you. So if you have gotten an assignment but not a signed legally binding contract, don't do stuff. Don't get invested. Don't do anything until that happens. So what that means is, follow up until you don't care anymore about working with that editor because they have shown that they're totally not worth your time. And then say, hey, I'm not going to work on this piece with you. I haven't heard back from you. I'm going to take this piece somewhere else. Thanks so much for your time. Funny story about that. Okay, now I'm actually going to do this about submissions. So Donna had this question. What if a pitch is accepted? You write the story, you do 2 edits, then you hear nothing from the editor. I think there was a similar question. Okay, how do you follow up with an editor who's been sitting on your article and not running it because it's not time sensitive? This clip is important to me and I was hoping to use it to get clients in this particular beat. Okay, so these 2 questions. So I recently in Australia did a workshop where a gentleman had, this guy is a journalism professor in universities, okay? He is a serious journalist, but he's new to travel. He had been sent on a press trip by the publication. So they hooked him up with the press trip. So it wasn't even just like he wrote the piece for this publication. He kind of felt this onus that he needed to do the piece related to the trip for that outlet because they had set up the trip. They didn't pay for the trip, but they set it up with the sponsoring agency. Now, they had been sitting on this piece for something like 2.5 years, and it was like his favorite piece that he had ever written. So I would read the email to you, but I didn't talk to him about using it, so I'm just going to paraphrase. But basically what happened was that he brought this up in our workshop, we talked about it, and I told him to just tell her point blank, you have until this date to run the piece, and if it hasn't been used by then, I'm retracting it. Because here is the reality of the situation, people. Until they have paid you for your words, and this was not an outlet that paid on acceptance, and I assume that's the case for all these questions that I'm seeing here, until that outlet has paid you, they don't own the effing piece, okay? You can take it away. You should take it away. So if you have been commissioned to write a piece, written a piece, especially in Donna's case, if they've done edits on it and then they're not getting back to you, just send them a very clear email. If I do not hear back from you with a firm publication date by, if this article is not going to be published by, I am retracting it and I will publish it somewhere else. Now, in the case of this gentleman that I mentioned, he got an email response from somebody who had stopped responding to him like literally years ago. He got a response in minutes. And she said, what magazine are you taking to? Are you taking it to da-da-da-da? And she named her competitors. And I again, I'm not going to read you his exact email, but it was, you know, his first thought was like, screw you. But he responded professionally. And she said, okay, that was like, that was it. He got it back. So all of you that are sitting on pieces with magazines, just tell them, I'm taking the piece back. If either you don't give me a firm publication date by blah, 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 or if it's not published by blah, blah, blah. Just take it back. You absolutely can. It is 100% within your rights if you don't already have a contract. So what is the moral of all these stories? The first thing you should do when getting an assignment is to get the contract. And that goes back to your professional communication process. So once the editor gets back to you with an assignment, which is like, hey, can you do it in this many words by blah, blah, blah date? We want to put it in the blah, blah, blah issue. You say, great, thanks. Do you have a contract that you prefer to use, or should I send you mine? Like, write that down. Do you have a contract that you prefer to use, or should I send you mine? That is your very next email. And don't start working until you have that. Now, I recently spoke to a legal expert that we're going to have actually come up on a webinar in the hopefully near future and talk to you guys about legal issues. But he said that actually those emails are actionable. So those emails where they say they want this many words for this much money by this date, those are also legally actionable, but it's much more difficult to threaten editors over that. So it's much better to just get a contract. So I've got one sort of sideways question about this, and then we're going to wrap up, not just because I've gone long, but I have a plane to catch in about 2 hours. So Emily says, I've been doing some content marketing for Travel Brand. I've already been paid but haven't seen the clips yet. Is it okay to ask the editor for the clips once they're live for my portfolio, or should I just keep looking through the website for them? I had this come up the other day with an outlet that I was god-awfully annoyed at, even though they paid fantastically. So I asked her, and I asked her because the editor, the sub-editor that I was working with, wanted me to rewrite the pieces to be significantly longer than the assignment, and this outlet or what have you has different price buckets for different lengths. And so my whole point was, I don't care if you've already paid me, if you're publishing it longer than what this was commissioned as and you have different prices for that, you need to pay me that price. And she was really squirrely about giving me the clips. But generally, I wouldn't say that it's the editor's job to find your clips for you. Like, very few editors will ever do that. So as long as you know the website that they're going to appear on, just wait for them to come up. And you absolutely don't have to ask them about using them for your portfolio. But from a legal perspective, you shouldn't copy and paste the whole text. You can have a snippet of the text and link to the original source and make it clear there's an excerpt. Or you can have a screenshot. Those are the two ways to handle your clips. All right, guys. So thank you guys so much. I'm going to go pack and get myself to LaGuardia to go to the Tribe Writing Conference. And hopefully I'll see some of you guys in Nashville this weekend as well. Cheers, guys.